You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Youth crime has become a hot political topic, with some parties promising a tougher attitude if elected. However, others believe white-collar crime is just as much of a concern and that the underlying causes of youth crime should be addressed first. Dr. Ronald Kramer, a professor of criminology at the University of Auckland, is concerned with the debate around youth offending. He recently wrote an article for Newsroom warning readers to be wary of letting the vague concept of youth justice saturate the political agenda. I started our interview by asking him what we can expect discussions about youth crime to center around in the lead up to the election.
So I think they'll center around what they've typically centered around, which is sort of unusual or newish forms of offending. And I think it'll be pretty much the same kind of conversation we've been having up until this time.
Are there any false narratives around youth crime that we should be concerned about during political discussions?
Yeah, so I think the main thing that we're going to get is that, you know, these are problems that can be solved with criminal justice type interventions. And while those criminal justice interventions will do something, of course, I don't think they will address the larger kind of social conditions that produce the motivation to offending. And so I think that's probably the narrative we'll get, and it's one we should probably be a bit wary of.
What false narratives around Māori and Pasifika young people in particular should we be aware of when navigating discussions around crime?
So one of the things that's quite interesting about recent concern with youth crime, I would say, is the hesitancy to actually talk about offenders other than their youth. So, you know, it's interesting what comes up and what doesn't come up and what gets repressed when we speak about, when these things are spoken about. So I don't think we'll get like false narratives per se around that. What I would say, though, is that when we're creating these kinds of policies, they are going to be operate in a context that is sort of unfair and sort of unequal. And so the impacts of those policies are going to be felt more so than for some segments of the population than others, right? So most of these policies will effectively be more significant for marginalized communities.
You said in your Newsroom article that the concern around youth crime from politicians is about securing the white privilege. Can you explain why this is?
Yeah, so I think what we've kind of got right now is a very unequal society, a society of very profound power asymmetries. So, you know, we've got worsening inequality and all the rest of it, for example. And these policies are not about addressing any of those more fundamental social problems. They are kind of efforts typically to intervene at an individual level, and they are efforts that kind of try and mop up or sort of contain the excesses that this kind of society is likely to produce. So I think so much criminal justice is about maintaining a certain kind of social order, but not changing that social order. And so given that this is a society of, you know, those power asymmetries that privilege, you know, sort of white men for the most part, middle upper classes, all the rest of it, if we're not sort of changing that underlying social dynamic, we're effectively reproducing it and normalizing it and protecting it.
You said in your article that politicians should not be involved in crime and punishment. Where does the onus fall then?
So I think that was more of a like ironical statement, not a literal one. I mean, of course, they're going to keep talking about crime and punishment. They're never going to stop. I can't see that happening anytime soon. But I think the point is the way we're talking about this is, you know, kind of predictable and is probably not really helpful, right? If we're really serious about crime as a social problem or particular forms of offending, I should say, then we, I think, have to start thinking about the larger context in which all of that is playing out and which is producing all of that, those crime problems, so-called crime problems. And if we're not having that conversation, then we're just sort of, you know, doing what we've been doing for the last however many years.
Some parties have proposed boot camps, and I believe you have come out against the idea. Why do you believe boot camps are not effective in addressing youth crime, briefly?
So this is, like a, you know, very simplistic kind of solution and suggestion, and the idea is that this will somehow fix people or create a more disciplined young person. But it just, you know, if again, if you're not going back to the larger context that is producing the motivation to certain behaviors, you're not really going to fix it. You know, the way I would sort of put this, one way to think about this is, you know, these people who are calling for boot camps, I guarantee you that given the opportunity, they would not employ anybody who they had put through a boot camp, right? Because they don't actually, it's not about like integrating people or improving their lives, right? It's about trying to control people, their behavior, without addressing the forces that are driving that behavior. So that for me would be the most profound limit to something like a boot camp and most of these criminal justice interventions that get proposed. Criminal justice can't fix social problems.
Finally, what recommendations would you give politicians trying to address the underlying causes of youth crime and to reduce the ongoing damage to property and businesses?
So the time period in which, you know, these kinds of crimes that we're worried about, like we're just not worried about white-collar crime, for example, right, which also the cost of that massively increased in the same time period, but we're not even having that conversation from what I can tell, right? But the time period in which the kinds of crimes we're obsessed over were at their lowest was when we had relatively full employment, robust social security systems, things like that in place, right? When people could earn living wages, you know, from having a job, basically. So those would be the moment in time that we should probably go back to and look at. Right now, we look at, you know, pre-modern modes of punishment and think they're going to work. But then that sort of post-World War II era, when we had robust social security systems, that's when these crimes were at their lowest, right? So I would say it's for policies and, you know, the political realm, it's things like that were effective in our historical record.
That was University of Auckland criminologist Ronald Kramer on the debate surrounding youth offending in the lead up to the election.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.